Well, this is the No Look Pass. I am Brett Shishkoff, and I have across from me Mr. Brian Hawkins.
Hello, everyone.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. I'm in a sports frame of mind, I think.
Well, that's always good.
As much as I can be.
Yeah, when we're talking about sports, we probably should be in that frame of mind, so I should probably get there, too. You're ahead of me, so I'll just switch that, you know, flip the switch in the back of my head to make sure that I'm in sports mode.
All right.
All right, we're ready to go. All right, so we'll start with, let's just start with the Bears. I think we'll have plenty to talk about with the Bears, so I feel let's just start there. What did you see on Monday against the Eagles there, Brian?
Well, I don't know. I think first and foremost, the Bears need to learn to play an entire game, not just the first half.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
They need to be able to make adjustments. I guess there's no hiding. We have to mention Jay Cutler.
Yep.
Because he is sort of the center of most of the criticism that you see in the papers over the last couple of days, and his ability to, number one, not protect the ball, his ability to not, if he's hurt, he should be able to evaluate whether or not he should continue in a game,
right,
and not endanger or be
hampering the
detriment to the team.
Yep.
If he can't throw the ball, which is basically what they had been doing most, and then he shouldn't he should be able to say, well, you should take me out, I can't throw the ball. I understand he wants to play and he wants to prove he's tough, but I don't question his toughness. I've seen him take some gut-wrenching hits and get up and continue to play, but like I said, if you can't throw the ball, then you shouldn't be competing.
Yeah, he's been behind a lot of suspect offensive line, so he definitely has gotten demolished in many, many games throughout his years of being a Bear. But it's just weird because they were reporting that he did have some type of ligament damage before the Monday night game from the Houston game, and it didn't come up until it looked bad. Like, basically, he was throwing downfield. Alshon had a nice catch there in the beginning of the game. I think it was in the first quarter maybe, where they had like a 40-yard reception that took them down to the 5. And that's when they were able to get their first touchdown. And then it was pretty much something happened. I don't remember if he got sacked or it was a sack fumble or whatever it ended up being. But then all of a sudden, that was where it seemed like the wheels fell off of the Bears, whatever game plan they had, it went away.
Yeah, I think if he was injured, there's a thing where the Bears should have reported it to the league and they didn't. So for all practical intents and purposes, he wasn't injured when he went into the game.
Right.
But if he in fact did have a damaged thumb, it was aggravated when he was sacked and then he fumbled the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came back after the next possession, that's when he threw an interception. And a lot of people think that it had to do with his thumb, but I don't. I saw it, and it looked like the ball was headed towards the receiver, but he didn't anticipate a linebacker stepping in front of that receiver and picking off the ball.
Okay.
But before that, let me just say that there was something that happened once he got tackled and fumbled the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I think the announcers alluded to it. They said that the crowd started booing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really changed the entire momentum of the game and also the mindset of the Bears.
Right.
It's as if everybody said, oh, here we go again. And all of the wind was sucked out of everyone's sail.
Right.
And then he comes back and throws the interception. So that compounded it. And and then he all of a sudden has to take himself out. He can't play, so on and so forth. I don't know. Kind of seemed like he saw that the crowd was against him and he's like, well, I've got to explain this. So I'm hurt. I'm not going to go back into the game.
Right. Yeah, it's tough. This was a game that both me and you realistically saw them being able to win. And
I said I didn't know.
What?
I wasn't sure. I didn't know how it would go.
Okay.
But I didn't expect this, certainly. I thought they had a chance, obviously, but I wouldn't say for sure I thought they'd win. But I didn't foresee this entire debacle.
We did see, a bright spot that we did see was Eddie Royal. Eddie Royal's looking pretty good. He was dealing with a lot of injuries during training camp, but it's good to see him back on the field and healthy. When he's healthy, he could be a dangerous weapon for them. And so that was kind of the bright spot. He had, a punt return, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For a touchdown, yeah.
Yeah, that is good to see. We don't see that too many from the Bears since Devin Hester left. But, if we can start to have that as another weapon in the special team side of the ball, when you can have all three phases, special teams, defense, and offense, contributing, you're gonna normally win a lot of games. And unfortunately, the offense was, I felt the weakest part of the team. I thought the defense held up for the most part as much as they possibly could. But when your offense isn't doing anything, you get worn down. And I think that's eventually what ended up happening is they just, like you said, the wind came out of the sails of the defense as well.
Right. And the thing of it is that I don't think that the Bears' defense played all that badly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's just that... at least in the beginning of the game, they were playing well enough seemed that things were in hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that with the offense not being on the field very much, mm-hmm. they get tired. And then, of course, all the injuries that started to pile up.
Right.
The secondary, I think, was pretty much decimated
mm-hmm.
that started the game. And then, of course, they lost their lead linebacker. And all of those things contributed, I think, to what eventually wound up being a pretty sad game.
Yeah, looking at the running backs, from what I could tell, Jeremy Langford kind of struggled. And then they had Jordan Howard came in, and he actually broke off a couple of runs that looked pretty decent. Not really super long runs, but he was able to get more than just 2 yards per carry, which it seemed like that's what Langford was struggling with. And then Howard came in and he was able to get some running room. Do you think that there's a possibility that Langford is maybe on a short leash as well, and that the rookie might take over here somewhere down the line?
Well, I think, yeah, he'll probably get more playing time because the Bears did release their fullback,
mm-hmm.
Paul Lasicki, is it?
Or... I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. So, and also... I think so. The rookie will be, I guess, getting more playing time. And the thing about it is, the Bears are supposed to be a running team, and it looked like at least for the first two games they were throwing the ball more than they were running. They didn't stick with the run
mm-hmm.
Long enough, I think. And maybe that's a problem. Maybe that'll change as well. And that's one of the things that helped Cutler and the rest of the offense be somewhat successful last year, is that they were running the ball more and not relying on Cutler throwing and making plays as much. But that seems to have changed with the new offensive coordinator. Nobody's really mentioned his name at all this week.
Yep.
Dowell Loggins.
Yep.
So he's had a rough first two games.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see if he can make adjustments moving forward.
Yeah, moving forward, that looks like with Cutler, he has a sprained thumb. I haven't really heard too much about how long of an absence that's going to be. It looks like he won't play this week, so we're going to have Brian Hoyer, who has started for a couple other teams. Last year, he started a few games for the Texans, and then the year before that, he was with the Browns and started a good handful of games, and actually, beginning part of the season, had them in a playoff picture. And then how about halfway through the season is when the wheels kind of fell off. So he is a starter who can get you wins. He did that last year with the Texans, giving them a few wins, and the Texans ended up getting into the playoffs. But it was like a quarterback by committee last year for them, and then the Browns, like I said, they were in a playoff picture. So... I don't know what you're going to see. I think you're going to see Maybe they do lean on that running game a little bit to try and take some of the pressure off of Brian Hoyer, go towards the style of that they had from last year instead of what they've shown so far this year.
Well, Rick Tallender of the Sun-Times had an interesting way of putting it. He said, Hoyer is not the future. He's a finger plug and a leaking dike. But Cutler is not the future either. And right. Let's not forget about Mr. Connor Shaw.
Yes.
And he played well in the preseason. And I think the Bears think well of him. It's just that he, of course, broke his ankle. Mm-hmm. And he's not available. So hopefully... he might be the guy that they're looking to for the future, because Rick Tallender and some other columnists have called for, one of them being Stephen A. Smith, has called for Jay to get out of town.
Yep.
And if that happens, then maybe Connor Shaw is somebody that they can take a good extensive look at.
I do think that that's probably what we'll see at the end of this season, is you'll definitely see the Bears moving on from Cutler finally. I think they've held on to him for far too long to begin with. But they felt that he was the best choice that they had over these last few years to be able to win. But it hasn't really come to that. We were talking about this a little bit earlier, that he's had the weapons to be able to be successful here in Chicago. You've had a good running back in Forte for many, many years, and you've had, you know, the Greg Olsons of the world passing through. You've had Martellus Bennett. You had Marshall. You have Jeffrey now. So it's not like he didn't have any talent around him and was just playing with a bunch of, you know, C's and B type of guys. You had some A type talent here, and he still has not been able to, you know, bring a playoff in a while and then not even get very far into a playoff at all.
Yeah.
So, and that's what you want from your team, and especially with the following like the Bears have, there's no reason why the Bears shouldn't be at the top of football. You know, money's not an issue. The Bears are always selling out, and that should be something that they should take into account of, you know, and they have been spending. It's not that they haven't been. And so I wonder what they're going to do if they're going to, with Alshon's contract being up this year and Cutler, do they just kind of cut bait and then rebuild the offense? Or do they keep Jeffrey and get rid of Cutler? Like, I wonder what next year will look like. We're kind of only 2 weeks in, but it is kind of interesting to just see both those two key components on the offense. Both could be gone next year. And the offense could look completely different. I know you pointed out the McPhee comment, or like McPhee made some comments to Cutler and holding him accountable.
Yeah, Cutler came as he was coming off the field after throwing the interception. McPhee greeted him with some choice words.
Uh-huh.
Who knows exactly what he said, but he basically was taking him to task for his play.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And some columnists, Potash and Tallender and Rosenblum of the Tribune, they think that he was out of line for doing so, mostly because he's hurt and he's not playing and helping the team. So I don't know.
I think no matter what, that kind of shows from McPhee's side of it is he wants to win. Even if he's hurt, he still wants his team to be doing well. And I look at it as, you know, you had it with Brandon Marshall when he was here. He started to kind of make some noise in the locker room and trying to hold some people accountable, and then they just kind of decided to get rid of him. And it's just sometimes you need those players to hold. You need players to be step up as leaders. And we all know Cutler's not that guy. Cutler has not even shown any of that leadership side of it. He's just there, and
yeah, you
there's
said
not much there.
Yesterday he lacks fire.
Yep.
The fire that you want to see.
Yep. Anything else on the Bears? I know that we have them coming. The Cowboys are coming up. My Cowboys.
Yeah.
I'm excited about. This is the one game out of the year that I root against the Bears, which is against the Cowboys I've been following since the early 90s when I was playing football myself. And so I am looking forward to this game. The Cowboys always tend to play really bad against the Bears, and the Bears play really, really well. So we'll see if that continues. That trend the last few times has been the Bears been more successful than the Cowboys in these matchups. So we'll see if the Bears get off the losing streak of two and get their first win this week.
Yeah, that's the thing to remember, that it's still early in the season. They could really turn this whole thing around, mm-hmm. and they still could wind up, believe it or not, 13-2 or whatever,
yep.
however many games they have left. But here's something interesting I didn't know. The Bears had a chance to draft the Dallas quarterback, Dak Prescott.
Uh-huh.
But they passed him up in the fourth round, and they took linebacker Nick Kwiatkowski and safety Deion Bush and cornerback DeAndre Hall. Now, DeAndre Hall, when I've seen him play, he's played very well.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, but just something to throw a little salt on the wounds.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of hindsight's 2020. You really, like, I didn't know anything about Dak Prescott, even when they drafted him. I didn't know what the guy was capable of doing, but so far he's been good. Like, he's not made mistakes like the other backups for the Cowboys last year, and so it ends up that he is cutting down on the turnovers. I think he only has maybe one turnover in the first two games. I don't think he has one yet. It's the same thing with Wentz. He didn't have a turnover either, and so. When you have these rookies coming in and they're showing how well they can adjust to the game, it makes you kind of wonder why the Bears have not decided to maybe look at a rookie quarterback or draft a rookie quarterback and just see what they could get instead of, you know, the extension to Cutler or any of that. So, this is a fourth round guy, Dak Prescott, yeah. that's doing what he's doing. So it's not like you spent a lot of value in the draft. It's not a first or second rounder. So, you know, it does happen. I think Russell Wilson was the same thing. He was a third round draft pick. He wasn't even a first or second rounder. He fell all the way to the third round, and look at, he's given the Seahawks a couple Super Bowl appearances and two wins that mm-hmm. they have?
No, I think they lost one game.
That's
lost
right. Yeah. They won one and lost one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I remember
you can wait and take a quarterback, and it can pay off.
Yeah, but I remember a few weeks ago I was saying on this show that the NFL needs to figure out a way to develop quarterbacks, because it seems that if you're a young quarterback, you don't get the reps in practice to develop.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, you have these rookies that are playing well right out of the box, so mm-hmm. to speak. And the thing about Dak Prescott, from what I've seen of him in the first couple of games he's played, he doesn't necessarily look like he has an abundance of talent, but he's just damned efficient.
Yes.
He, you know, gets the ball where it needs to go, mm-hmm. and he throws puts the right touch on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Dallas has been rolling, but we'll see what happens when Romo heals.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think they kind of take, with Dak, they're taking the route that, like, Brady takes a lot of the times, is not really pushing it down the field on a regular basis. He'll just basically dink and dunk his way all the way down the field, and that works. You don't always have to stretch the field. And I think that's something where maybe Cutler wants those big flashy plays,
yeah.
or maybe wants just dunking
arm.
It down to your running back or your tight end. There's nothing wrong with that. Get the 5 yards and, you know, just continue to move the ball little by little. You don't always have to take those shots. You take them when you think you have the opportunity to do so. Like, if you see Aaron Rodgers, most of the time when he takes those shots, they're about the 50-yard line, and it's a first or second down, and they know that they're going to be able to at least make up, you know, some of those yards within the next two downs or so. So it ends up being, I think, Cutler just, he's never really learned that part of the game, or wants to fall to that part of the game. He feels like he needs to show off the skill and talent that he's been given. And that's, you know, that's good that he has it, and you want to show that off from time to time. But I think he just has fallen in love with the strength of his arm, and basically thinking his arm can outthrow an entire defense. And that's not, it obviously has not gone well for him for many, many years.
Yeah.
So I think we've talked about the Bears for quite a bit. They have the Cowboys coming up, and so we'll look forward to that game, and we'll probably chat about that a little bit next week. Hopefully, in my case, the Cowboys get a win, but, you know, if the Bears win, that's okay too, I guess. They need to get a win at some point.
Yeah.
I hope it's not against my team. So I think we're going to move on to baseball, if you're okay with that.
I am okay with it.
All right.
Particularly since they're doing so well. At least the Cubs.
Did you want to start with the Cubs, or do you want to start with the Sox today?
Well, we probably don't have much to say about the Sox, so we can start there.
Okay. I don't know if you saw this, but the other night against the Royals, Abreu had a few things to say about the Sox and the organization as a whole, and his disappointment about where they're at, and his they were comparing the Sox to the Royals, and what do the Royals have that the Sox don't have? And Abreu says that it's heart, that the Kansas City Royals, they believe they're in a game no matter if they're 10 runs down or if they're one run down. It doesn't matter. They believe that they can come back and win a game no matter what position they're in, where the Sox doesn't seem like they have that. And he goes, they asked him, do you think that the Sox need to make, you know, what do you feel like is the moves that they need to make to be able to be successful? And he basically is like, well, I know I didn't start off well, but I have been picking it up, and a couple other players have picked it up to try and make a push here at the end of the season. But some of the guys need to be understanding that they're playing for their livelihood and their jobs for next year, and they're not really taking it seriously. They already feel like they're out of it and have already packed it in. And he goes, I'm not a person to pack it in, and I want to make sure that we are going to be successful. I don't want to just be on a team that continues to be at the bottom of the American League. He's like, I want us to be playing for championships. So that was kind of interesting just to have him say that, because he seems to be a relatively quiet guy, and it could be just because of the language barrier, but this is the most I've actually heard out of him, and it sounds like he wants to kind of step up as that maybe vocal leader of the team with Chris Sale. Like, it's not just him complaining about the organization. Now you have someone on the offensive side of the ball, or, you know, that's playing with Chris Sale, who is a key, you know, component of the success of the Sox moving forward. So what do you think about, you know, now you have another person besides Sale? Do you think that this is going to start to have a positive impact? Do you think that they're going to start trying to build a better team maybe with these pieces that, you know, you had those AJ Pierzynski type players that you had for the World Series year, but we really haven't had much of that in the last few?
Well, again, like he said, he himself started the season off not really producing.
Yeah.
So why did it take him so long to get to a point? But like I've said before, I just think that it has to do with the organization. It doesn't seem like the Sox. Like, if you look at the Cubs, it's clear, without even really following them all that closely, mm-hmm. that from ownership down, they want to win.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure that that message is being sent from the ownership of the Sox as clearly as it is from the Cubs.
Right.
And I think that filters down to the players.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the players, you know, not having the desire, they know that they can just move on to another team.
Right.
Most of those players are starters. They have a value. And some guys will be able to move on if it came to that.
Right.
But, they should have some pride and so on and so forth. But, you know, sometimes there's an apathy that takes over organizations, whether it's sports or just any kind of company, and the employees just don't go that extra mile.
Right.
There isn't that desire to excel, and, mm-hmm. and it seems that's what the White Sox are mired in, and there needs to be a change. And I don't know if you remember, but flashing back to when Reinsdorf first bought the team, along with Eddie Eichhorn, and I think it was, what, 83 or something like that. They came in and they were making changes just like the Cubs are now.
Yep.
They came in, and the first thing I think they did, one of the first things, was they got Carlton Fisk, and mm-hmm. that was a signal to the rest of the team and the fans. Then they in the next year or so, no, I think they came in 80, 81. But anyway, whatever it was,
yeah. mm-hmm.
by 83, they'd won, I think, 100 games, and they were in the playoffs, and there was some momentum going there.
Okay.
But I don't see that same enthusiasm from management, and I think that's where it needs to start.
Yeah. I just wonder, because the Sox can sometimes be the forgotten team in Chicago, I just wonder if maybe they feel that. Like, it's just the fan base isn't as supportive as they are when the Cubs are like doing well. Like, when the Sox were even in the World Series or get on their run, it almost felt like all the way until the last month of the season for everybody to kind of get behind the Sox and kind of say, oh, well, this team might have a chance of doing something great. I think people are more willing to jump on the Cubs bandwagon because of the Cubs being the Cubs. And so I wonder if that kind of feeds into some of the mental side of it for the Sox.
Well, I think it would have the opposite reaction. And mm-hmm. I say that because many years ago I worked for a radio station here in town, mm-hmm. which no longer exists. It was called WBMX, and it's now V103.
Okay.
And our rival was WGCI, and they were the Cubs. GCI was the Cubs, and we were the White Sox.
Yep.
So we were always trying to do whatever we could do to beat the other team.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would think that with the White Sox being sort of the second team in the city, that would give them, the desire to want to play harder and play better. I think we've seen that when they play the Cubs. In some years, they've beaten them, and they've been very competitive when mm-hmm. they play each other. So, no, I think that would be a plus in their favor, that it would help motivate them to play better overall so that they can have another season like, 2005.
Yeah. I think what I've noticed is, at least within the last, let's say, 5 years or so, the record for the Sox in their division has been horrendous. It has been really, really bad. They've played, I think I saw something where they've played the Royals over the last 4 years, and out of the 110 games that they've played, the Royals have won 77 of them.
Oh, yeah.
That's not good. When you're facing a team that has become the new rival for the Sox, of like, that's who they want to basically knock off the pedestal. It used to be, for the longest time, the Twins were kind of that tough team you couldn't get. They always seem to have the Sox number. Now it's the Royals and the rest of the division. It's not just one team. Like, the Twins are the only team that they've been able to beat this year. And even that's been a little bit of a struggle. Cleveland has had their number. Detroit has had their number, and the Royals have had their number. Like, and when you can't win these games in your division, you're not going to be successful. And that's been the case for the last few years. So at some point, you need to change something to, get these games within your division. They just crumble, it seems, when they're playing within the division, and that's not good. And so I think, just from the player standpoint or coaching standpoint, maybe it's everything, there needs to be a big overhaul of the Sox for there to be just maybe an entire culture change. Kind of, just to go right into the Cubs, it is, like, I think the biggest thing that you saw when the Cubs were really, really making the effort was the hire of Epstein. That, I felt, was the start of, like, okay, this is a guy who literally has helped the Red Sox, who also were considered a cursed team, being able to go and win a few World Series. Now, it wasn't just one. They won two or three while Epstein was kind of with them.
Yeah, they won two. Yeah.
Yeah. So now Epstein is kind of here, and he's enjoying being a part of the Cubs. Yeah, they had an article of him, basically, he'll sit in the stands for his lunch. Like, there's not a game in there, but he'll sit in Wrigley stands and just enjoy being a part of just what Wrigley Field is about, what the Cubs organization is. And so he's just enjoying putting this team together and seeing the end outcome of what, you know, the last 3-4 years have been since Epstein's been a part of the organization. And so I think that's really what you see, is you see a general manager who is loving his job and loves it and has such a passion for it. You don't see that with Kenny Williams. Like, honestly, Kenny Williams just seems like he's always annoyed and, like, just doesn't have that passion that Epstein has of literally he's motivated to get this team a World Series that they've been after for over 100 years now.
Well, yeah. And then another thing about the White Sox is they basically, I think it's Rick Hahn, who's the general manager now. Mm-hmm. He basically came from within the organization.
Okay.
And it seems like the Cubs obviously went outside and they got what's sometimes referred to in baseball as a baseball man to run the team. Mm-hmm. And they did that before and had some success with Andy Pfaff, I think his name was.
Okay.
He came from Minnesota, and after Minnesota had all those successful years,
then
he came and he did well with the Cubs, and now they did the same thing. They went out and they got another great baseball man mm-hmm. who's proven that he can put together a winning team. And the White Sox usually hire guys with little or no experience mm-hmm. to do that. And I think that that also is a problem. And Kenny Williams, I think, like, he and Ozzy used to butt heads because, uh-huh. I don't know, maybe it's an ego problem. But, yeah, I see your point.
I just think that if you look at the difference between, like, how Epstein has built the Cubs, it was a lot of young players with a combination of a few veterans sprinkled in there. And like, picking and choosing those veterans, not guys who are at the end of their careers. Like, you get Lester, who is a little bit older, but he's still, he's good. And, he's an 18-game winner already this season. And so he's pitching really, really well at Wrigley. You don't really see the development of the young talent with the Sox. Like, they get great young pitching, it seems like. But every other part of the Sox, it's very hit or miss. Like, it seems like I said, they're very good in their draft of pitching. I don't know what they do with the rest of their young talent, and it seems like they just traded away the few guys that are good in the system, and then they end up going elsewhere, and then they get World Series elsewhere. It's like, okay, what are these other organizations doing developing our talent that we drafted to be able to have them be successful? Something is missing for the Sox, where with the Cubs you have the development of the young talent from, right into the minors, and then Joe Maddon's not afraid to play these young players and have them make mistakes, where maybe Robin is a little too conservative and not letting these kids play in these games to learn from their mistakes and be able to hopefully learn faster, kind of learn under fire type of thing. And you do have to worry about, like, the confidence of that specific player, but it also shows the mental toughness of a player too. And does that kid have it? And if they don't, and then okay, maybe we do need to move on from this player. So I just think that you definitely see a difference in the way Epstein has developed teams with a combination of young players with a couple veterans sprinkled in there for the just to have that experience in a playoff run to help those kids know what to expect.
Well, I don't know if you remember or not, but a season or two ago, maybe 2 or 3 ago, the White Sox had controversy regarding their minor league system and their scouting, and that they had scouts who were demanding that recruits kick back money to them in order to get signed. So, and I don't think I've ever heard any type of evaluation as to how that affected the White Sox minor leagues. Mm-hmm. And you have to think it does have an effect, because if you have a guy that's really talented, he's probably not going to go for that deal. He'll go with another team.
Right.
And maybe you have a guy who's not as talented, not as much in demand from other clubs, who will take that deal mm-hmm. just to get a chance to play so he can help his family, particularly, if he's coming from, one of the Latin American or Latin countries. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that had to have an effect, I think, on the type of players that the White Sox have been, you know, getting in their minor league system. And then they, even though they have had good players, they haven't, good position players, they haven't had a lot of success in developing them.
Yep, I agree. One thing I actually wanted to touch on, I think that's enough for the Sox, and we've kind of been doing both Sox and Cubs together, just as kind of comparison, but I think I told you this earlier about how impressive the Cubs have looked in, from the pitching standpoint of having all of your pitching, having four pitchers having 14 wins or more. It's the first time that the Cubs have done this since 1930. It's pretty amazing to think that that's taken that long for you to have a pitching staff that way. But the game has changed quite a bit from what it used to be of how many pitchers you're using, and there used to only be three or four man rotations way back when.
Right.
I know that they're kind of in a limbo mode right now, the Cubs. They'll want to, you know, make sure they have home field advantage all the way until they get to the World Series, which we were kind of talking about how frustrating the World Series not being, you know, the home team being the best record, but it ends up being the home team for the World Series ends up being the, you know, American League this year because they won the All-Star game.
Right.
So do you think that not having these, the pressure on them anymore, like going into the playoffs, do you think that's going to hurt them in this first series? You know, they have, I think it's 18 days before they have their first playoff game. And right now it's just them kind of, you know, they're playing Milwaukee and Cincinnati and these teams that realistically they should probably have good control of these games, even though they've struggled against Milwaukee these last two series. I don't know if you noticed that, but they've only taken one game out of the last two or three series, one game in each series. So the Milwaukee has taken each series against them in the last three.
Well, no, I don't think it will hurt them because I think their biggest competition is themselves. They try to improve upon their own play and make themselves better as individuals and as a team. And I think that they're just waiting to get to the playoffs.
Yeah.
But they want to make sure that they continue to execute and do the things that has gotten them to the point where they are now, where they're having success. And also, there are other things that are going on where they're getting some of the pitchers who were injured, like Stroop. He's coming back, mm-hmm. and they're getting some other guys back who will be healthy. So they'll have things to do. They'll have things to work on to prepare. So that's, I guess, the thing that to do now is to prepare for the playoffs. You know that you're going.
Yeah.
And I think their magic number is three, combinations of wins and losses with the Nationals to guarantee that they have home field throughout the National League playoffs, at least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So no, I think they'll be okay. I don't think that they are. There's going to be a whole lot of pressure on them.
Yeah, I think the other thing that I read was Joe Maddon. He actually thinks, because this year he actually was kind of spot starting a sixth starter, and he thinks that moving forward, a lot more teams are going to add maybe a sixth starter to be able to give their main three or four guys a rest so that they are fresh for the playoffs because of how long the season is. Do you think that Joe Maddon's correct that other people would want to or other coaches might follow suit in trying to spot start a sixth starter to be able to make sure that their starters aren't wearing down? Because a lot of the teams now who haven't been doing that, their starting pitching is kind of starting to falter.
Yeah.
So Cleveland's missing a pitcher or two in their starting rotation, and then I think the Mets, one of their pitchers, and then San Francisco also. So these teams that potentially the Cubs are going to see might be a starter down, and they're even with Washington, they're missing Strasburg, which is like their ace, who might not be back for that first series of the playoffs. So you have a wear down of these pitchers. I just wonder if maybe Joe Maddon is right about the future of pitching might be five starters, but here and there having a six starter come in and relieve your key guys.
Well, if it works for him, yes, he will be right.
Yeah.
If the Cubs win the World Series, then there'll be plenty of teams copying what the Cubs have done. Mm-hmm. But see, that's what I'm talking about. Joe Maddon, I think, is the key in terms of what the Cubs do now and when the playoffs start. He will, I don't want to say invent, but yeah, he probably will be coming up with things to keep their minds occupied and to keep them interested in playing and to, you know, make sure that they're just not going through the motions and trying to play out the string.
Yeah.
Things like, you know, putting a new wrinkle in here, you know, should we go with a six starter? And you know, who can I move around to what spot? He does that. He puts players in situations where he thinks they can succeed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that kind of thing keeps you occupied and keeps you interested in baseball. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that the Cubs will be all right in that era, in that way. But the thing that bothers me is that, God, these guys, they can't. They're wearing down. How many games are they pitching already? They only pitch what, five innings, six innings now, and now they can't go an entire season.
Well, I think actually what it's coming down to, I was listening to a radio show a few weeks ago, and John Smoltz was actually on this show, and he was talking about how parents these days are actually trying to get kids to playing year-round baseball at the ages of like 8, 9, 10 years old, and they're pitching at this time, and they're pitching all year round. And so he goes, this is where you see young players, you know, you even see when they become high school students, they're starting to have Tommy John surgery. Their arms are wearing out by the time they get to high school or college. And he goes, you're starting to see it kind of seep into Major League Baseball, where these players, these young pitchers are coming in and they're just wearing out halfway through a season because they've literally played so much baseball throughout their lifetime. Your body can only take so much wear and tear. Mm-hmm. And so that's where he kind of has been trying to say to these parents, like, you have to give your kids breaks. Like, you cannot have them play all year round. You have to be able to give them a couple months off for the body to recover. And so I think there's something to that, because if you think about it, there's a lot of players in Major League Baseball who don't just stop at the end of the season. They'll go and play fall ball someplace. They'll go into another country, play some baseball. The Cuban League that some players mm-hmm. will go down and play. They play all year round. And so then if you're having that, there's no rest for your body. And that's not, you know, as a pitcher, you need those days of rest and you need the months of rest, and they're not taking that into account. And so I think that's where the wear and tear is coming from, of how these guys are wearing down so fast.
And I think that's happening throughout many different sports, like football and everything like that, because they train year round. They've got, after the Super Bowl, like if your team doesn't make the playoffs, then you're not playing in December, January. But then I think in early spring, you've got mini camps. Uh-huh. You know, you've got, they're not mandatory, but you have OTAs and things like that.
Right.
But I think that's why you're starting to see now states, high school state athletic boards putting in things like pitch counts for pitchers.
Yeah.
And there are also, and I didn't know this, there are also rules as to how soon a pitcher can pitch after, you know, one outing, mm-hmm. not just a pitch count, but I think they have to wait a certain number of days before they can pitch again.
Yeah.
And they're putting restrictions on players' participation. So I think that's good. But, you know, gone are the days back in, the 1800s, where guys would throw 500 innings.
Right, yeah.
And things like that. But still, but after you become an adult, it seems like you should be able to. Because what's the difference? In the 50s and the 60s, you had Denny McClain. He won 30 games. So what did he pitch? 40 games?
Probably somewhere around there.
Then you had but you don't have that anymore. And what about complete games? You had pitchers throwing more complete games.
Yep.
So now it's so specialized that these guys can't go you know,
they're only going six innings. Yeah. They're not
100 pitches mostly.
Yep. So. Yeah, it is interesting that you see these guys breaking down and they're still trying to conserve them as much as possible, but no matter how much they're conserving them, they're still breaking down. So that's where you have to kind of think that it has something to do with prior to them getting to major leagues.
And also I think once they become major leagues, like we've been saying, that they train year-round and that they don't give their body a chance to rest.
Yep. And so, yeah, I just remember playing Little League that we had restrictions on how much we could pitch. Like, I wanted to pitch more, but, like, once I got to, I think it was majors, so from 10 to 12 years old, you could pitch an entire six innings, but that was it for the entire week. So, like, Little League has a lot more restrictions on how much you were able to pitch. But, like, if you were in Pony Ball or some of these other traveling leagues, they don't have those same rules. Like, they let you do whatever you want. If the coach wants to pitch you, you know, one day and then you only have one or two days rest, you could basically go back out and pitch again. And so that's where I think these specific other leagues need to establish the rules that conserve these kids from being able to push themselves too much and their parents pushing them too much as well. We've talked a lot about baseball. We do have two other sports that we can cover really, really quickly with the Bulls. So we'll start with them, and then we'll get to the Blackhawks real quick. Bulls, relatively quiet. Haven't really started too much yet. I have no great rumors to give all of you to list for this week, so sorry about that one.
I think their training camp starts next week.
Yep. So we should hopefully have a little bit more news on the Bulls side of it. Anything else basketball related that you just want to cover real quick? Or?
Well, it's kind of a delicate thing to say, but the thing that right away bothers me is, and I know he's community minded and rightfully so, and also given the fact that his relative was murdered in the streets of Chicago, Dwayne Wade has been talking a lot about what he plans to do in terms of gun violence in the city, which is good, but.
Right.
I haven't heard a lot about him talking about basketball and what the Bulls could be doing and what they will do.
Right.
You know, that's just a little bit of an observation on my point. Like you said, you haven't heard very much at all about anything from any of the Bulls. You hear more about Derrick Rose in New York than you have heard about what the Bulls are doing in order to put their team together. So.
Maybe because they don't have any idea what they're going to do. Maybe Hoiberg's still scratching his head like, oh, what the heck do I do with all these guys? Like, it's just a hodgepodge of just, like, randomness. Like, it does, for him to have to figure out how to put these players together of who's your first unit, who's your second unit, like, I don't envy Hoiberg at all. Like, that's a tough position to be in because I don't know what they were trying to do in this offseason. They're just like, oh, we need to grab somebody. And they just, like, panicked. Like, I just don't know. Like, the Rondo and the Wade side of it, they were good players. And they, you know, they probably still have a bit in the tank. But it's just, how do they fit with Jimmy Butler? And how do they fit with Taj and McDermott and Mirotić? Like, what do you do? Like, if you're Hoiberg, how do you go about working with the team that you have in front of you?
I don't know.
Exactly.
You know, last week I saw an article about the Bulls, and it talked about who's on their roster now. And there are a couple of players I didn't even realize were on their team. I can't remember their names now, but they've got players that didn't realize were there. And also I found out that Robin Lopez, his numbers were better than I thought they were. So we'll have to see how it all shakes out.
He played really, really well against his brother whenever they played the Nets.
Of course.
They played up, like, he played up to the level of his brother a lot of the time. Like, they played really, really well. So if he could play that way all the way through an entire season, then he's a great pickup for the Bulls. But you really don't know. And so, with what you were giving up with the upside of Rose and Noah when they're healthy, hopefully you can get with the combination of the players that you've received, hopefully it kind of evens itself out somehow. But yeah, it's a wait and see approach, I think. And the season's come fast approaching, you know, we're almost into October. And so it starts mid to late part of October, I think, is when the season starts. So they're only a few weeks away.
Yeah, around about the 8th or 9th NFL game.
Okay.
When their season starts.
Yep. So, yeah, we got that to look forward to once baseball's regular season is over. A couple weeks later, we'll have regular season basketball starting. So you'll have, for a little while, baseball, basketball, and football all going at the same time.
The greatest month in sports during the year is October?
I would think so. Either October... Yeah, I would have to say October. I was going to say spring with baseball starting up and having basketball playoffs and
hockey
playoffs.
That would be March,
playoffs.
Yeah.
But yeah, October and March are probably my two favorite months for sports.
Yeah,
because you have so much converging on each other to be able to have any sport you really want to watch, you'd be able to for the most part.
Yeah, for a week or two, I think all the sports are going either in preseason or in actual season.
Except for football. Within October, yeah.
Yeah, they'd be the actual season.
Yep. So we'll just move on to the Blackhawks, if you don't mind.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if you saw this last night or saw anything about the World Cup of Hockey.
I heard it. Yeah, I read about it, yeah.
Yeah. The U.S. team is pretty much eliminated. They have one more game to play, but they've already lost two games, and... They lost 4-1 to Canada. They had the first goal, and then Canada scored four unanswered. So, kind of a poor showing for the U.S. team. It's a little upsetting. You know, they have Kane, and I'm trying to think of any other Blackhawks that are on the U.S. team. I know there's a few others that are on, you know, quite a few on Canada. Taze looked pretty good yesterday. He had... an assist on two of the goals, I want to say. So he was passing really, really well. They were saying it was a very impressive pass that he kind of almost did like a behind-the-back pass directly to, I forgot who scored the goal, but it was just, they said it was one of the best passes they've ever seen a player make. So Taze looked good. Kane, I think, was kind of shut out. He didn't really do much of anything, and then their goalie play wasn't very good. They had Jonathan Quick as their goalie for both games, and
he hasn't been playing. He didn't play well last season at all.
Yeah. So I'm surprised that they didn't have another goalie that they could have went with. I know Crawford is a Canadian, and he was, I think, their backup goalie. Other than that, don't really have too much for the Blackhawks. They're going to be starting up training camp as well. I think maybe they've already started, didn't they? No,
not yet.
Soon,
yeah. But here's some names for you: Jack Eichel, Johnny Gaudreau, Austin Matthews, Zach Parise, Justin Abdicator.
Applicator, okay.
Do you recognize those names?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so those were the guys on the team with Kane.
Oh, who? Okay.
Some of the guys, anyway.
Those Ryan are McDonough, some good scorers, huh?
Ryan McDonough.
Okay. Yeah, he had scorers on his team with him, and they weren't clicking. It honestly seemed like they just were having trouble figuring out who was going to be the passer, who was going to be the scorer. Kind of what I noticed is similar to what it was with the basketball team for the U.S. of you had the guys who were kind of trying to do everything one-on-one type play. It wasn't a team effort for the U.S. hockey team. So that's kind of what I noticed with the little bit of the game that I was watching, is it just seemed like all of them, who, whenever they got it, they didn't want to pass it. They just wanted to try and outmatch the other guy. And it's like, you're facing Canada. Like, you have guys who are equally as good as the USA guys. So it's like, you're going to have to find the open guy. Like, it's just like in any sport, you want to make sure that you're passing it, making the defenses move, getting them tired out. There wasn't much of that I could notice. So,
and a couple of things. Marian Hossa, shouldn't he be resting? Why is he playing in the World Cup? Saving himself.
Hopefully he can get it like on a hot streak and then it'll go into the season. That's all I can say. If he gets hurt, then I'll be upset. But if it can get him going sooner, because he struggled the first part of the last season getting going, and it wasn't until late in the season that he started to actually get some goals on a regular basis, I think.
Yeah, maybe this will be good for him then.
So I'm hoping that this is kind of, you know, gearing a lot of these guys up to get on to, you know, maybe getting a little streak going, and then they can move right into the season already ready to go. So that's what I'm hoping with this tournament, is that it helps them get into playoff shape or season shape quicker.
And I'm going to do my best Jerry Seinfeld imitation. What's the deal with Panarin? Is he having contract problems? I think I saw an article where he was wondering whether or not he'd be all set to come back to the Blackhawks.
I thought he was already going to be back for this year. Are they worried about next year? Is that what it is?
No, I think it was this year.
Oh. Well.
I think it was, yeah, I was in the Tribune. I was kind of shocked by that because I also thought that he was all set to come back this year. But maybe I saw that in yesterday's paper.
Yeah, I didn't. I haven't heard anything.
Here it is. It's Panarin not thinking contract. Oh, they're talking about an extension. Okay.
Right. So. Yeah. Because he was just came in as a rookie last year. So I would imagine he has one or two more years. And so, yeah, they probably want to get him extended as soon as possible. Because if you let him get to free agent year, then a lot of times a player will hold out. But if you can get to them before their free agent year occurs, it's a lot easier to sign them to a little bit of a lengthier deal. So that's what I think is probably they're trying to get to him before next year, where I think it would be his last year of their contract. Because normally it's a three-year contract for a rookie.
Wow, he scored 30 goals with 47 assists.
He's good. I'm looking forward to seeing him grow a little bit more with Kane, and him having another, you know, having a full season under their belt of knowing where each other's at, what their skills are, because they were one of the most dominant lines in hockey last year. So I'm excited to see that line and how they hopefully improve off of what they did last year. And, you know, Kane, it was an MVP type season for him.
Yeah, Panarin's only 24, and if he isn't signed before or during the season, then he'll become a restricted free agent.
Okay. So, yeah, they want to make sure they get that taken care of, because he's one you do not want to let go. I think he's, you know, once you have the Keith and Taze and Kane, if they are starting to, well, Kane's still relatively young, but Taze and Keith, probably you want to try and keep these guys if you can, to not just have a whole entire rebuilding process. You want to be able to sustain it for as long as you can. So, yeah, he's one that I would have as a high priority for the Blackhawks that they're definitely going to want to sign right away.
All right. So,
well, I think it's been a pretty informative show. We went over a lot. In all of the sports, more than I thought were in the last two, but it was fun.
Oh, yeah.
So, this is Brett Shishkov, and I have Mr. Brian Hawkins that is across from me, and this is the No Look Pass. We will speak with you all next week once again with some more sports talk.